into his Homo Draconis form. Edgar's face was as gray as a dead man's. The pink around his eyes was diseased. He shrieked crazily.
"Screwed the pooch, Liam. Fucked up royally. I didn't want the bitch. I wanted the bastard."
He shoved the yellow back. Edgar sprouted scales, a terrible mottled green color to cover his gray skin. He took the slayer blade and stabbed himself through his side. He didn't want to put it down. He stuck it into his own body to hold on to it. Arya stepped back. This Edgar beast was insane. He strode through the doorway and continued to grow. The sword hung from his damaged body but was soon eclipsed by the sheer size of the dragon he was becoming. Somehow, impossibly, the skinling had become a full dragon skin. But either he'd rushed the process, or something had gone terribly wrong. His long, spiked tail smashed through a statue and swept paintings off the walls of the room. He unfurled his wings and took out a chandelier, then ripped through sheetrock. Bits of drywall rained down. Liam Strider reeled unsteadily. Blood dripped down his chest to speckle the hardwood floor. He made a circle with the fingers on his left hand and held up his right palm. He shouted,
"Magica impetim!"
Sizzling red missiles made of magical energy struck the dragon skin. The smell of rotting meat grew sharper. Edgar raised a giant dragon foot and stomped down on the piano. He flung his head back and smashed through the ceiling. A bathroom set came plunging down, a toilet, a sink, a shower. All that porcelain hit the floor and exploded in a burst of white shrapnel. Arya accessed her own true form and felt her body transform into a scarlet dragon, half as big as the moldy green dragon skin. Again, Liam called out, "Magica impetim!" and more red energy bolts hit Edgar, but the villain brushed them aside with contemptuous ease. Arya leapt onto Edgar. Though his stench repulsed her, she had to hurt him so she could escape. Perhaps Liam would let her leave now that all deals with Mulk's vassal seemed to be off. Liam sped forward and leapt, lengthening into the yellow dragon Arya had seen before. He sank his massive fangs into Edgar's throat, tearing away scales and covering both Arya and himself in blood. The three dragons thrashing around in the living room brought the rest of the ceiling down in a torrent of destruction. The staircase crumbled. Priceless works of art were crushed underfoot and smashed with whipping tails. The cost of the lost art was incalculable. The mansion had become an arena for battle. Edgar swept his wings back and brought them forward, unleashing a massive gust of air that blasted Arya into the far wall. She hit with the force of a car crash, plaster cracking, studs snapping, drywall cratering around her. Only the sorcery reinforcing the building prevented her from punching all the way through. Meanwhile, the yellow dragon lunged in, sinking his teeth in the villain's throat. Edgar flailed, but largely ignored the male dragon, instead focusing his gaze on Arya. Edgar twisted his head, opened his mouth impossibly wide, and unleashed an inferno of fire into Arya. Though she could withstand most heat, the dark fire erupting from the dragon skin blistered her, and she found herself roaring in agony. Liam pulled back, jerking his neck left, then right, teeth ripping into Edgar, trying to stop the deadly flame attack. Blood sprayed from the wound in Edgar's neck, but Liam hadn't been able to rip out the green dragon's throat. Edgar moved like a snake, quickly melting back into his Homo Draconis shape to slip out from between Liam's crushing jaws. The second Edgar was free, he plucked the slayer blade from his side and struck like lightning, cutting a gaping wound into Liam's belly. He rammed a clawed foot into the yellow dragon's guts. Edgar laughed with delight at the screams of pain from Liam.
"And I thought you were tough, being a Ronin, living alone, but nope. You ain't nothing to write home about."
He stuck the slayer blade back into his side, almost as if he liked it there, and returned to his dragon form. Wounds littered Edgar's body, but he hardly seemed to notice as he marched forward and bathed the yellow dragon in a sheet of fire. The remains of the piano burst into flames, as did other musical instruments around them. The curtains caught, and in seconds the three were trapped in a conflagration. Hurt, barely conscious, Arya flung herself toward the door, scrambling on her hands and feet. There was a chance, a slim one, that Liam's spells had failed from the power of Edgar's attack. Arya forced her body back to being human as she crawled, hoping she could escape. But a claw grabbed her foot and mashed her into the floor, forcing the air from her lungs. Edgar, towering over her in his partial form, pressed the Slayer blade to her throat.
"Bitch, you ain't leaving without me."
His serpentine eyes traveled up and down her naked body.
"We both know I can't rape you, but shit, I wouldn't want a fuck bait anyway. That's what you are, sweet tits. You're bait."
His fanged mouth opened in a leer. Liam ran through the flames and out the door, escaping, leaving Arya alone with the dragon skin and his rotten stink. In the distance, she heard the whoop of sirens. The humans had sent their fire department to take care of the burning mansion, but they would arrive too late to save her. Edgar would take her to one of Mulk's Aeries. But how would Stephen and Tessa ever find her? And even if they did manage to locate the Aerie, how could they fight the insane power of this mad dragon skin who stank of rot and ruin? Stephen watched as Tessa rose from beside the fire in the cave of the sacred pools and went to retrieve the Drokaris grimoire from where she dropped it along with her clothes. Watching her walk, he was amazed at how sexy she was. Was there anything better than watching a naked woman walk? He'd caught a glimpse of the beauty and power at the heart of the universe, and yet that seemed to pale in comparison. Returning with the tome, she smiled uncertainly at him.
"Why are you looking at me like that?"
"You're so gorgeous," he replied with a wide grin. "Just admiring the view." She blushed.
"I bet you say that to all the girls."
She lay down, opened the book, and then burst into tears.
"What's wrong?"
Stephen asked, shocked and worried.
"I can read it," she wiped the tears from her face. "The words, I can read them perfectly. Something happened to me, in the waters, something..."
He reached out and stroked her back.
"What?"
Her first words came out hesitant, but as she talked, she became more confident.
"When the water rose out of the pools, when I was suspended in midair, it was like I had a closed door inside me, locked tight, and then suddenly... this energy acted like a key, and that door burst wide open. I can feel the animus. I think,"
she faltered, hesitating,
"I think I can use it."
Stephen nodded. "Remember how Arya talked about morphlings, warlings, and magicians? There are humans who can use animus to change their shape, fight, and cast spells. That must be what you are, though I wonder which one." His hands went to his chest, searching for the pendant. Then he remembered that his necklace was gone. But where was the pen? For a second he thought he might have dropped it during his trip to the heart of the universe, but then he found it next to the fire. He must have brought it with him after he and Tessa had made love at the side of the pool. He raised it, a long piece of mystic, quill-shaped topaz capped by a feather crafted of sapphires. It was amazing to look at. To his surprise, the pen wriggled in his hand with a life of its own and leapt from his hand. It went to the book, flipped through pages until it found a blank space, then began to write furiously. Tessa and Stephen watched in wonder. The pen flipped back to the dragon's skill tree and filled in the last of the blanks. Transformatio, head of the dragon, partial transformation, homo draconis, true form, dragon soul. Pugna, tail of the dragon, dark armor, dragon strength, serpent grace, shadow strength, ion claw. Exhalance, left wing of the dragon, inferno, electro arc, toxicity, arctic wind, shadow flame, chromatic fury. Beneficium, right wing of the dragon, magica defensio, magica cura, magica impetum, magica incanto, magica divinatio, magica porta. Then it returned to scrawling out the rest of the book, page after page, like an automatic printer. When it was finished, the pen shuddered and lay still. Tessa touched the pen reverently and caressed the book.
"I don't know about that whole werewolf thing, and straight-up battle doesn't really appeal to me. But spells? Yeah, I think maybe that would be up my alley. It feels right, you know?" Stephen nodded and rose to his feet. He was full of animus from the sex and from his battle with the yellow dragon. He knew, without a doubt, he could achieve true form. He stood, stretching his back, flexing his arms, and transformed into his Homo Draconis form with almost no effort at all. It felt as natural and effortless as being in his human form. And from there, it was only a bit more to expand out to his full dragon shape. His body expanded and grew until he was 30 feet long. Thankfully, the cavernous pool room was big enough to accommodate his bulk, even with his wings expanded. It felt good to stretch them out. He examined himself in the crystalline blue waters. He was the color of midnight. His scales, his claws, his wings, everything was an inky black color, the same hue as a raven's feathers. He'd always liked his dark hair, but he liked his black scales even more. He also noticed for the first time that the burning in his chest was gone. Vanished. Apparently he'd crossed a major threshold and had survived. Tessa sat staring at him, hugging her knees to her chest.
Stephen, you're beautiful.
I bet you say that to all the boys,
he growled. His voice was deep, inhuman, like a force of nature. She laughed. No, but then you're the first boy I've ever dated that could turn into a dragon. Stephen closed his eyes, feeling out his huge, powerful new body. Idly, he wondered if he could fly yet. He flexed his wings. Probably yes. He was a dragon with wings, and he knew with a little practice he would soon be soaring through the air. That realization was delicious. Tessa held the grimoire, reading it.
It's not just the skill tree that updated. There are spells in here, Stephen, pages and pages of them. The first set of spells are Magica Defensio. They include shielding, hide, and something called Mind Wipe. I think that's to stop humans from remembering they saw anything supernatural.
Like in that movie, Men in Black,
Stephen rumbled. Bingo. But there are also blank spell slots, which makes me think maybe there are more spells out there to learn and unlock. Tessa shook her head and gently, reverently, set the book on the floor in front of her. She sat cross-legged, back straight, with her hands resting on her lap, palms up. Her left hand rested on her right hand, and her thumbs were only an eighth of an inch apart. If she didn't keep her concentration, they would touch. Clearly, she had read and understood the section on meditation. He knew she would be breathing in through her nose and out through her mouth. He shifted from his true form back into his human shape and joined her. Sitting there, he focused on his breathing and on keeping his thumbs from touching. He could picture the skill tree perfectly, and the Magica Defensio on the right wing called to him, throbbing with a dull golden light. Yes, he could feel how to manifest the animus into a physical form.
Magica Defensio, Tessa whispered, then... Stephen, look.
The air around her shimmered a light pink color. Then a semi-translucent sphere formed above them, drifting gently down until it touched his head. It felt like someone tapping on him. It was there, her magic, in the form of an orb.
Magica Defensio,
Stephen said, following her lead. Animus flowed from his body to create a semi-translucent onyx orb. His sphere swayed, bumping gently into hers with a slight clicking sound.
I can't believe mine is pink, Tessa murmured, rolling her eyes. So sexist.
She morphed her sphere, willing it bigger and opening a hole in the bottom. She lowered the orb until it settled around her. Stephen lengthened his sphere until it was arrow-shaped, then willed it forward, slamming the tip into her shield. The swirling pink around her flashed, and his arrow disappeared into a puff of smoke. He stood, turned Homo Draconis, and tried to touch her with a claw. Again, the air around her flashed a more vibrant pink. Try as he might, he couldn't pierce the shield she'd created around her. Tessa gasped.
You... me... am I doing that?
I think so, Stephen said. Welcome to the wonderful world of magic.
The pink shield faded, and Stephen's claw came down to settle gently on the new magician. He backed up, turned into his true form, and carefully picked her up in his enormous hand.
She seemed so fragile and soft compared to the hard edges of his scales. He raised her up until he was gazing on her. She smiled at him. Her eyes were full of such love. "It's official, Stephen. You've swept me off my feet." He laughed in a thunderous growl and set her back down. Then he returned to his human form and pulled her into a tight hug. "The feeling is mutual, Tessa. All of this dragon stuff wouldn't mean much if I didn't have you to share it with." She sighed, and cried one more tear as she reached up and ran a hand over his head. "Shifting must have given you your hair back. I'm glad. I really like it." Stephen was glad for that. They reluctantly broke the embrace.
"Let's get something to eat," he said, "and then we have to find Arya. I think we're ready."
"Hell yeah, we are," Tessa agreed. Stephen picked up his cell phone, then on a whim tried his mom at home. He didn't have high hopes. He thought it would ring and ring. It didn't. She picked up.
"Hello?"
Stephen let out a sigh of relief, but then realized he had no idea what to ask her. "How did you discuss your secret dragon heritage with your adopted mother?"
Chapter 24. In the cave of the sacred pools, Tessa dressed while Stephen stood near the fireplace, his phone pressed against his ear.
"Mom," Stephen said in exasperation, "where have you been? I've been trying to call you for like 3 days. I left messages at work. You missed my birthday." His mother wailed.
"Oh, Stephen, your birthday. I'm so sorry. How can you ever forgive me? And this was a big one. I had things I wanted to tell you." "No, not this one. Next year. You're 19 now, right?"
"No, Mom," Stephen sighed. "I'm 20. 2 decades. His mom's voice grew distant.
"On the eve of his 3rd decade, he will know. He will know."
Stephen shivered. It was what Stefan Dracaris had said. Florence Whip was quiet for a long time, and then she said,
"I can't talk about this on the phone. Can you stop by? I forgot, or maybe I wanted to forget. We have to talk, though, and it might be difficult for you to understand."
Stephen felt tears in his eyes. "I know, Mom. I know I'm adopted. I know most of what happened 20 years ago.
"I looked for that topaz pendant in the junk drawer, but I couldn't find it. Joe said it would be important."
Again, his mom sounded strange.
"Can you stop by?"
"Are you okay?" Stephen asked. This time the quiet on the other end of the phone felt ominous. Were there people with her? Was Edgar Vale there? "Mom, are you okay?" Stephen asked again, fear freezing his belly.
"Yes, Stephen, come by. I'll be home all day. I won't leave."
"I'll be right there," he said. "And I love you, Mom. Nothing is going to change that. But are you okay?"
"Yes, I love you too. Just come quickly."
His mom hung up the phone. That definitely felt wrong. Tessa gazed on him with worry in her eyes.
"Everything all right?"
Stephen shrugged, lips pursed into a thin line. "I don't know. I don't think so. We'd better hurry." They headed down the spiral staircase and into the entry room. Stephen threw on yet another set of clothes, which, again, felt like the whole purpose of having a hoard. From there, they beelined for the garage. Stephen so wanted to take the Corvette or the Charger, but with the wet pavement and snow in the air, he reluctantly decided on the Bronco. His eyes flashed over the damaged Mercedes, and seeing it made him both mad and scared. Arya. They had to find her before midnight, otherwise she'd be forced to marry Rehagen Mulk. Stephen found the keys and slipped in the driver's seat. Tessa hit the passenger seat with the grimoire sitting on her lap. There was a loop of leather on the spine where the topaz pen fit perfectly. The barista turned magician found the registration in the glove compartment.
"Okay, no getting pulled over. The registration expired in 1997.
That made sense. A year before he was born. "If there's trouble," he said, "you protect my mom. I'll do the fighting." Tessa nodded.
"Yes, with my new magic spells, which I can cast, since I'm the magician. Me? Fuck yeah!"
He grinned at her as he backed up the Bronco.
He threw it into drive, and they went screeching through the cave toward the exit. The magical entrance opened automatically, and he was back on the highway. They heard sirens below as well as the chatter of radios. Lights flashed in the cloudy day. That would be the police and a road crew to investigate the remnants of their battle with the Yellow Dragon. Getting past them would be difficult, so he spun the Bronco around. They would have to take the long way. Tessa's phone had GPS and a map app, so she guided him over Lookout Mountain. They finally found I-70, and he roared west toward his mother's house in Thornton. Tessa read the grimoire the entire way. 20 minutes later, he pulled up to the house in the lower middle-class neighborhood where he'd grown up. A quaint, yellow brick, ranch style, it had an attached one-car garage and a front lawn that had seen better days. The street was wide, quiet, and shaded by tall trees, which lined the walkways on both sides. Like his mom's place, the other houses were mostly ranches, older but well cared for. For the most part, at least. They both got out of the car. On such a wet, cloudy spring day, no one ventured out and the streets were empty. A little mist rained from the sky with a snowflake or two thrown in to make things interesting. Stephen shivered at the chill, missing the warmth of the fires and the pools. Tessa nodded toward the house. "You go in first. I'll be back up." "Sounds like a plan." Stephen walked up to his house, used his key, and opened the door. "Hey, Mom? You okay?" he called out, scanning the living room. The living room had been the same for 20 years. A couch and an easy chair with afghans covering them just like doilies covered the neo-colonial end tables. The coffee table was also doily central, with a scenic Colorado book of photography on it. Everything was in place, just like it should be. No sign of a struggle. The delicious whiff of his mom's cooking filled the house. Waffles, breakfast sausage, eggs. Florence Whip came out of the kitchen a moment later with batter on her nose. She was a thick, middle-aged woman with wild hair, crow's feet poking out from the corner of her eyes, and a face that liked to smile. Her hands were bright red with thick knuckles. They were the hands of a woman who had worked her entire life to make sure her son always had food and shelter, if not other opportunities.
"Stephen!"
She hurried over and hugged him.
"I'm so sorry I missed your birthday, and I can't find that necklace. He said it would be important, and I kept it around, but now I can't find it. I feel so stupid."
"You're not stupid, Mom." He hugged her tighter. Persephone might have been a great woman slash dragon, but she hadn't been there every second of his life. Stephen broke the embrace and went to the door. "All clear, Tessa. We're fine." He turned. "Mom, what happened? How come you never picked up the phone?"
"I got tired of those scam people calling me all the time with them. I tried to turn off the phone, but I couldn't figure it out, and if I left the receiver off the hook, it would make that awful sound. So I put all my phones in the basement. Then I forgot about them."
He chuckled. Such a mom thing to do. "What about your manager at work? I left a bunch of messages with her."
"She never told me."
Mrs. Whip frowned, forehead creasing.
"That woman has it in for me, I swear."
Tessa approached the door. For a second, Stephen wasn't sure his mom would approve of her with her partially shaved head, tattoos, and piercings. But Tess was all class.
"Hi, Mrs. Whip, I'm Tessa. I'm Stephen's friend."
"Girlfriend," Mrs. Whip shouted.
"A girl, Stephen, a real girl. You found a girl. Kathy Roberson thought you were gay, but I didn't."
She shook her head. "I know.
Though, if you were, that would be just fine. I just didn't want you to be alone in this cold, cruel world."
His mom bustled over and hugged Tessa with every ounce of her strength. Stephen about died of embarrassment. Tessa, though, took it all good-naturedly.
"I'm a real girl. And Stephen isn't gay, I can assure you."
His mom blinked, then laughed and motioned them into the kitchen.
"Come on in and we can eat and catch up. I'll keep looking for the pendant. It was important, and I owe you a birthday. I made waffles, your favorite, with the bacon grease and the batter. I know it's too late to even call it brunch, but I also know you like breakfast food."
"Sounds awesome," Stephen said and meant it. He was famished, positively ravenous. They all sat down at the round kitchen table. The tablecloth was as lacy as the doilies.
The kitchen was big, green, and so 1970s. It hadn't been updated in the half-century since it had been built. The electric stove was the original, and only half the burners worked. Stephen, though, only had eyes for the spread laid out before him. Syrup, waffles, sausage, bacon, and eggs, with grapefruit halves in the good bowls. They talked while they ate. "Mom," Stephen said as he dug into his fifth waffle. "Tell me about Stefan and Persephone Dracaris. I know most of the story already, and I'm fine with it." His mom frowned and cried a little, but laughed more. She was armed with her instant decaf coffee doctored up with non-dairy creamer and lots of artificial sugar.
"You're just glad Joe Whip wasn't your real father, am I right?"
Stephen paused eating and then had to laugh. Kinda, but you'll always be my real mother."
"If you want me to excuse myself, I can," Tessa said. "If you want to talk in private, I'll understand." "Please, stay," Mrs. Whip insisted. "I can tell by how you two are that you're close and bound to get closer. It's what happens with people your age."
Tessa nodded happily and stayed, but she remained quiet. A lot of history was about to come out.
"Joe was a scoundrel," Mrs. Whip said. "He was exciting and adventurous, and I was just me. Being with him was part amusement park funhouse and part funeral. Oh, the sadness he could bring. But mostly he left me alone, which at times was a kindness. I liked my independence."
She paused, staring into her mug.
"He didn't want you to know the truth. Not until you turned 20. He said that you'd be safer if you didn't know you were adopted."
"Smart," Stephen said. "Did you ever meet Stefan Dracaris?" His mom didn't answer the question. She stirred her coffee, lost in the past.
"You came to us and you were a little baby, a cute little baby brought home in a storm. It was cold that spring, so cold and snowy. I swore I'd love you like my own. Joe came and went, but it was always you and me against the world. To tell you the truth, I forgot you weren't mine. It was a poker game that started it all, though. That's how we ended up with you. Or at least, how he ended up meeting Stefan."
"A poker game?" Stephen asked, confused. Mrs. Whip nodded.
"At the new Wells Fargo skyscraper in downtown Denver. Did you know that the building has its own zip code, 80274? I remember when they were building it. I didn't like how it looked at first, but now it really adds something to the skyline. I drive by it every day. It makes me think of Joe. It's supposed to be a cash register up top, but I don't know that it looks like one."
Stephen and Tessa exchanged glances. This felt important, though Stephen didn't know how it all fit together. "A poker game at the Wells Fargo building?"
"Yes, you know your father. Well, adopted father. He liked to gamble. No, not like. It was his thing. He had a gambling addiction, but in the end, it brought you to me."
Mrs. Whip sipped her coffee and stopped talking, an empty look filling her face. "Tell me about the poker game," Stephen prodded gently.
"Joe said they were big rollers there, real dragons," he said. "But Joe got strange. He said some of the people he met weren't human, but other things. I blamed it on his drinking, but he said that's where he met Stefan Dracaris the first time. But he also said the whole thing was run by Ronald Reagan, which should tell you what his state of mind was. A president gambling with my Joe? No."
She laughed a little and shook her head ruefully.
"Are you sure it was Ronald Reagan and not Rehagen Mulk?" Tessa asked. "I suppose that does sound a bit familiar," Mrs. Whip admitted with a shrug. "But it was so long ago, it's hard to remember. In any case, Joe said they were all rich and they didn't mind losing. They thought he was cute. I know women were there. That bothered me some. But the only pretty faces that could truly capture Joe's attention were queens on cards. His ladies, he called them, when we played gin rummy."
"And you're saying those poker games were held at the Wells Fargo building?" Stephen asked.
"That's right. At the top, in a secret suite. Or so Joe said."
Mrs. Whip got up and went to the drawers in the kitchen.
"But really, that pendant, Joe said it would tell you everything, but how can a pendant talk? I don't know, it's all very strange."
"Sit down, Mom," Stephen said. "I have the pendant, and yeah, It told me everything. He wasn't sure if he should tell his mother about the secret world of dragon souls. Not right then. Tessa put it together in a whisper.
Another Airy? Maybe Rehagen Malk's Airy in the Wells Fargo building. If that's the case, I bet that's where Arya is.
Mrs. Whip sat down at the table again. Stephen's phone twittered in his pocket. He took it out and saw that it was Arya calling. He launched to his feet, spilling his mom's coffee. "Hold on, Mom," he said, thrusting a wait-a-minute finger into the air. "I have to take this." He went out the back door and stood on the back porch. Thick snowflakes tumbled out of the sky now. Some of the flakes caught in the overgrown weeds and tangles of bushes in his backyard. He kicked himself for not taking better care of his mother's lawn. Well, once he sold a Rembrandt or two, he'd hire a service to take care of everything before he found a better place for her to live. He pressed the answer button. "Hello?"
"Stephen, run."
Arya's voice was as desperate as it was afraid. Then static and rustling filled the speaker. A new voice took over, deep and despicable.
"Where you at, boy? You and I have one more dance before my prime comes back for his wedding. I'm gonna give Malk your head as a wedding present."
"Edgar, if you hurt Arya, I'm going to eat your heart while you watch," Stephen growled.
"Now that's a big threat. You don't even know where I am."
Stephen grinned, but he did.
"How about you and I meet at my old apartment? You know where that is? I want to kick your ass in the same place where Arya fried your ass."
"Sun sets at 5. How about you and me dance there at 6? You and me, whelp. Just the two of us. I'm gonna love watching you die."
Click. The phone went dead. Stephen walked back inside the house. "Mom, Tessa and I have to go, but things are going to change. I came into some money, and it's a long story, but now is not the time." Tessa took her dishes to the sink while Mrs. Whip went to him.
"Stephen, what's going on? You seem so different. Older. What's changed?"
"Everything, Mom. Everything. I'll tell you all about it, I promise, but not now."
"Are you okay, Stephen?"
she asked, concern filling her words as she searched his face. "Never better, but we need to go." He leaned in and kissed her on the forehead, then shrugged free of her arms. After they all said their goodbyes, Stephen was back in the Bronco with Tessa beside him. Stephen was quiet until he got on the I-25 on-ramp. "Okay, Edgar thinks I'm going to meet him at my old apartment to fight at 6. We wait until he leaves the Wells Fargo building, and then we go into Malk's Airy and rescue Arya."
"What if your mom has the details wrong?" Tessa asked.
"She doesn't," Stephen said. "Not this time." A plan formed in his head. He turned to Tessa. "I wasn't the only one crushing on you at the coffee shop. Bud had a thing for you as well, didn't he?" The barista grimaced.
"Yeah, I guess. But what does that douchebag have to do with any of this?"
Stephen grinned. "Call him." He told her his plan.
Chapter 25.
It never really got serious about snowing, but it did get colder as twilight took over the sky. Tessa paid to park the Bronco at a downtown lot, and it was wicked expensive. Stephen missed Arya's Magic American Express. But soon he would be a millionaire, once they started selling off pieces from the Jakaris hoard. He and Tessa walked through the deserted downtown. Sunday evening, nothing was going on, and there were few cars and even fewer people. They posted up across the street from the Wells Fargo building, with a clear view of the front entryway. A handful of uneventful minutes passed by before Bud showed up, walking down the sidewalk with a wide, shit-eating grin on his face. It was the grin of a man who expected to get laid. He was dressed in jeans and a sleek North Face ski jacket, his hands shoved into his pockets. He had a scarf wrapped around his neck and a trendy stocking cap. His breath came out in clouds. He walked right into the Wells Fargo building just as Tessa had instructed him. The phone in Tessa's pocket buzzed, and she picked it up after a few rings. Bud's voice came over the phone, indistinct.
"Thanks so much for coming downtown for me," she said after a second. "The party is on the top floor, penthouse level. There's a security guard, right?
Just tell them you're there to see Rehagen Mulk.
More chatter from Bud. Tessa frowned.
Yeah, I know, Bud. I've always thought you were hot, too.
A pause, as Bud replied. Tessa shook her head, her frown deepening.
If there's any problem, come back to the lobby. I'll have to walk you in. Sometimes the security at these parties are total assholes. See you soon.
She hung up and turned on Stephen.
You know, this wouldn't have worked at the Antlers in Colorado Springs.
Yeah, Stephen agreed. But that wasn't an act of Airy. I'm betting he goes up there, everyone flips out, and he comes right back down. Tessa's concern was evident on her face.
You're betting his life on that. What if they just kill him?
I don't think they will, Stephen said. Dragon souls have to hide themselves, and civilian murders must be a big deal. Sure, it's possible that Rehagen Mulk might have the entire DPD in his pocket, but that still won't stop the media reporting on some rando kid disappearing downtown.
Tessa reached into her purse, where the grimoire and topaz pen were stuffed, and came out with her cigarettes. Just a half of one, she said. This plan is all kinds of fucked. I know he's a bully, and I know he's kind of an asshat, but he's still a person.
Him? I don't think so. He's a lower creature. Like all you humans, Stephen said. He meant it as a joke. Not only did Tessa not laugh, she glared at him. He backtracked right away. Totally kidding. But Tessa, we needed someone to help us, and we needed someone clueless. Once he gets kicked out of the building, then we can snag him and get info on what we're facing. You and I can't run recon. They're searching for us. She didn't answer. Instead, she clicked open her lighter, lit a cigarette, and exhaled.
This is a side of you I haven't seen.
What do you mean? He asked.
She flicked the ashes from her cigarette. Actually, there are a couple of sides, and they're dark. I have to say they're darker than I would have thought.
Stephen nodded. I can be brutal when I need something, like working 8 jobs and not sleeping, and I can go scorched earth when it comes to strategy. Maybe if Stefan Dracaris had more of that, he wouldn't have been killed. I don't know.
I can respect all that, Tessa said. But what gets me is your grudge against Bud. You stood up to him. You slapped him. It's over. If you use your new powers to go back to your old life to get revenge, this is never going to work.
He let her words sink in. Part of him did like the idea of sticking it to everyone who had ever wronged him. He had the power and he had the money. Todd Butch would pay for pantsing him in the 7th grade. Yes, Stephen's revenge would be swift and brutal. But then he went back to what he felt for both Tessa and Arya, and his rage at what Rehagen Mulk did to his parents and their vassals.
You're right, he said finally. I have a new life. My number one priority is keeping you and Arya safe. No refrigerator for either of you.
And my second priority? To take down Rehagen Mulk. He murdered my parents and he would have killed me as a baby. We both know that.
And if you kill Mulk, I'm assuming you'll get his primacy, which is kind of the whole point of Dragon Souls, right?
I don't know. The thought did seem appealing to him in some strange way. If he was at the top of the pile, there would be less danger of anyone hurting his escort. That word came so easily to him now. Tessa went quiet, her face troubled. Stephen tried to make her feel better.
Look, when I realized that we needed intel on Mulk's Airy, I had no other plan. Bud seemed like the perfect guy for the job.
Speaking of which, Tessa's phone buzzed. Bud immediately started screaming at her. Stephen couldn't hear every word, but he did hear bitch, and not just once.
Tessa took it in stride. Okay, calm down. I'll come and grab you out of the lobby. Better yet, come outside. I'll explain everything in a minute.
When she hung up, she rubbed her cigarette out on the building and then put it in a pocket on the purse.
Yeah, maybe I was wrong. Bud is a total asshole, but he's alive, so that's something.
They made their way across the street and pressed their backs up against the side of the building, just out of view of the entryway. A few minutes later, Bud came storming out of the building, and damn did he look worse for the wear. One eye puffy, face red, hair mussed, bottom lip split.
Over here, Bud,
Tessa called out, waving at him with one hand. Immediately, his eyes locked on Stephen.
Oh, I get it. Hey, Stephen, still trying to get back at me? This hurts, Tessa. This hurts a lot.
Tessa sighed.
Look, I'm sorry. You wouldn't have come if I didn't play it like I did, and we needed your help, bud. Seriously, we did. And this is life or death we're talking. You saw the guns, didn't you?
Yeah, like machine guns,
Bud huffed, crossing his arms. Exactly, Tessa said. Bud glanced at Steven again.
You've been working out? Damn, I'm sorry. I never would have dicked with you if I would have known you'd try to get me killed.
Steven shrugged. Let's call it even. So tell us what you saw. Our friend is most likely up in that penthouse, and we have to rescue her. You do know Aria, right? Tessa asked. Bud blinked in shock.
The foreign exchange student from India? Her?
Yeah, Steven said. She's in trouble. We think she's being held hostage up there. Did you see any sign of her?
No, not her.
Bud stood there for a minute, collecting himself.
So the security guard in the lobby got all funny when I mentioned that name, Rahagan Mulk. It was like a magic ticket. He walked me to the elevator, used a special key, and opened a hidden panel. Now, I was thinking this was all really cool, if a little strange. He hits a button, and I go straight up.
Bud went on to describe a short hallway that led to a set of huge wooden double doors. He didn't need to knock. Three goons in black Kevlar flooded out, grabbed him, and socked him in the stomach and the face. They screamed questions at him. Who was he? What was he doing there? How had he heard of Rahagan Mulk? He kept telling them that Tessa was there, and he was there for the party. They laughed at that, of course. Bunch of assholes. Still, he managed to get a glance inside the penthouse, and it was swanky, expensive, but yeah, of course it was, with a view of the skyline and all. A whole panel of windows showing Denver's lights. There was a woman in there, small, petite, and blonde. She simply smirked at him as if the whole world were some big, sick joke. She wore a slinky black dress, hot, like knockout hot. Around her were men with assault rifles, and some guy in a purple silk suit. At that point in the story, Bud grinned.
Yeah, seeing the woman and the guy surrounded by mercenaries felt off. Like, those two were tougher than all those men with big guns. Something about them was just off. Weird, you know what I mean?
He paused, squinting.
Kind of the way you're off, actually.
Steven knew why Bud thought that. Two dragon souls, most likely. Vassals to Mulk. Doubt gripped Steven. Could he take on other fully grown dragon souls? He felt powerful, but with dragons in the mix, as well as Edgar Vale, it felt daunting. Tessa sighed. But no sign of Aria. Bud shook his head.
Is she really up there?
We think so. Steven answered. Bud turned pensive.
We have to get her away from those people. We should call the police.
We think this Mulk guy owns the police, Tessa said. We're going to have to rescue her ourselves. But this lot is on the lookout for us, which is why we recruited you.
That made Bud laugh. You two? No offense, but that is not going to happen. What have you been smoking, and can I have some?
Thanks for the intel, Bud, Steven said. There was no way he was going to reveal his true self to this dipwad. And we're sorry for messing with you. It won't happen again. Bud went and gripped Steven's arm.
Look, whatever is between us, we can call it water under the bridge, okay? But please, man, don't do it. Don't mess with those guys. They have guns, and they look like they know how to use them.
His voice dropped low.
Between you and me? They only let me go because I started to cry. Otherwise, I think they might have killed me. If you go in there to rescue Aria, they'll definitely shoot you five ways from Sunday.
We can't leave Aria. She's with us now, like we're together. We love her and she loves us, Tessa said.
Bud quirked an eyebrow. Like, love, like, together, together?
His voice rose in a lilt. Steven nodded and shook off Bud's hand.
Steven Whip, damn, you've come a long way. I can't believe it. Except I also can. You've changed, bro. You've changed like no one ever has.
That was the understatement of the year. Then Bud said the impossible.
If Aria is in trouble, I want to help more. Maybe I can be a distraction.
Really? Both Tessa and Steven asked in complete surprise. Bud turned pale and sweaty, but there was courage burning in his eyes.
Yeah, I've come this far, I have an idea. I go get pizza and take it up, like as an apology. No one is going to kill a dude bringing pizza.
That better be some tasty fucking pizza, Tessa breathed. While he listened to the exchange, Steven couldn't help but wonder if this was how Dragon Soul Primes got vassals. Were people just drawn to him now? It made sense.
No, I want to help, Bud said, resolute. I know an all-night place not too far away from here. Give me a few minutes.
He got out his phone and called an Uber.
I'll be right back.
A few minutes later, a Prius showed up. Bud got in and the car drove off.
We should talk him out of it, Tessa said, watching the car zip around a corner.
Steven wasn't so sure. If Bud could get the attention of the goons up in the penthouse, that might be the edge they needed. It was 5:20 p.m. They didn't have much time. At least Edgar wouldn't be there at 6. Or so they hoped. But what if they got into the penthouse and Arya was gone? Well, at least Steven would get more animus from the battle, and it would draw Edgar back to his boss's aerie. Worst case scenario? Mulk was there, and Steven would find himself fighting the Dragon Soul Prime himself. Despite the wet chill, Steven shed his clothes. He then went Homo Draconis. He growled out the plan.
Bud keeps them busy by the door, and we go in through the window, but I'll have to fly up there. Time to practice.
Lucky the streets were empty. Steven easily transformed into his true form. In a heartbeat, a 30-foot dragon stood on 17th Avenue in downtown Denver. He ran down the middle of the street, loping along like a wolf on the prowl. He raised his black wings and pumped them, acclimating to the new muscles in his shoulders, and then launched himself into the air. Lifting off was more effort than he'd imagined, but then he was off, flying. Then a wing dipped, and he came tumbling down onto the pavement, ass over tea kettle. He thwapped his head on the road painfully. Tessa's laughter echoed off the surrounding buildings. He got to his feet and turned to her, lips pulled back to show his formidable fangs, which were like chunks of black diamond.
Laugh it up, magic girl, but I better get this right since you're going to be riding me.
Been there, done that, Tessa quipped. That made Steven chuckle. A car's light flashed in the distance. Steven turned back into a very naked human and dashed to the side. The car drove past. Marijuana smoke fogged up the interior.
Colorado, Steven grinned. Am I right?
Right you are, Tessa agreed. Now try it again, dragon boy. He shifted back into a dragon and went sprinting down the street once more. This time he managed liftoff much quicker, but when he tried to climb, he went careening to the right and hit a building, morphing into a Homo Draconis at the last minute so he'd cause less damage. To the building, not to himself. He landed on the ground, human butt first.
Any suggestions?
He asked, shaking his head. Tessa made a face.
I've never flown before, but maybe it's too hard to both take off and fly. Maybe if you jumped off something tall?
Damn, are you trying to kill me? Steven hated the idea. It would make the crash even more painful. However, it was difficult to get enough lift while trying to maneuver in the relatively narrow streets.
I'll try it, but...
Ouch, he muttered, gaining his feet.
You'll be fine, Tessa whipped out her phone. Let me text Bud that we'll be at the parking garage on Sherman Street. We can try it off the top of that. It's only like 5 stories. You'll be fine.
Says you. Steven threw his clothes back on. Another quick change. How did Superman and Peter Parker do it? Then they were running down the street to the parking garage. They found steps and started up. A thought hit Steven.
If Bud sees me as a dragon, he'll know my secret.
There are spells we can use. I've been studying. Tessa gasped from the physical exertion of sprinting up the concrete stairwell.
No more talking. I'm so out of shape.
At the top, they jogged to the edge of the parking structure. The street looked small from so far up. It felt like 10 stories, even though Steven knew intellectually that Tessa was right, and it was only 5. Steven once again shed his clothes. I'm gonna get those snap-away clothes for quick changes, the ones those male strippers use, 'cause this sucks. Hard. I'm getting chafed. Tessa was bent over, hands on her knees, trying to catch her breath.
That's the least of your worries, she panted. I'd be more worried about going splat at this stage.
Stephen climbed up onto the concrete guard and stood there, swaying just a little. This was it. If he messed this up, he'd break a bone, or all his bones, assuming he didn't just die outright. And then their plans wouldn't mean squat. He threw his arms around himself, teeth chattering. It was so fucking cold. Still, he could feel himself sweating. This was crazy. He was trying to teach himself to fly. Still, there was no other way, and nothing ventured, nothing gained. Before he could talk himself out of jumping, Stephen dropped off the side. Stupid. There was no place for his wings. He was too close to the edge. He assumed his partial form and kicked off the building, then turned into a dragon as he plummeted, the ground rushing toward him. His wings loved the feel of the whistling wind under him. He craned his neck, arched his back, and stretched out his wings, which allowed him to bank up, gliding more than flying. Damn, that was so much easier. He pumped his leathery wings a handful of times, gaining altitude, then wheeled around a corner and saw the pot smokers in their car again. Good thing they were stoned, or they might have been surprised to see a dragon. But his scales were midnight black, providing him natural camouflage in the night. He beat his wings again, harder this time, and rose higher. He was doing it. He was flying. It was like a dream where he could control every aspect of his flight. His wings now felt like an integral part of him, and he knew it was partly because of his heritage. The Drokaris weren't normal dragon souls, he knew that. They were special, which meant he was too. He soared up higher and higher until he was coasting above the skyscrapers. Clouds swirled overhead, but there was little wind, and the snow had completely stopped. He wasn't cold now, not a bit. He saw Tessa standing on the parking structure, next to his bundle of clothes. He'd forgotten one little detail. Landing. He drifted down. This was gonna hurt. That was when Stephen saw Bud holding the pizza boxes on the street. The guy's mouth hung open in shock. Well, there went the big secret thousands of dragon souls had kept for thousands of years. Leave it to a butthole like Bud to blow the whistle.
Chapter 26 Stephen couldn't worry about Bud learning the truth. He had to focus. He didn't like the idea of going directly from the sky and hitting the top of the parking garage at full speed, and he didn't think he could poof his wings out like a parachute. Then an idea hit him, but it would give Bud an eyeful. Stephen glided down the empty street next to the parking garage, careful not to hit either side of the steel and glass canyon. He beat his wings once, which gave him enough lift to get to the top of the parking structure. He banked right. He nearly took off Tessa's head. She ducked as he came down onto the roof. It was only a 6-foot drop, but he was going way too fast. His front feet hit, then his back. But then the weight of his tail flipped him over, and suddenly he was several tons of dragon rolling out of control across the top of the tower. The world became a blur. He ended up on his back, as a human, staring up at Tessa, who had her phone to her ear.
"No, Bud, I didn't see a dragon. You feeling okay?" Tessa asked.
Stephen stayed on the ground and wrapped his arms around himself. He hurt from the terrible landing, but he was still alive, and he hadn't broken a bone. He had a handful of bruises and scrapes, but nothing that would keep him down for long. Besides, he hardly even noticed them because he was absolutely elated with the fact that he'd flown. Yes, he had everything to learn, taking off, landing, all that. But that first flight, beneath the clouds, above the city, the wind on his face and the breeze under his wings, holding him up, it had been magical. He grinned. Tessa frowned.
"Bud, you shouldn't go up there. It's crazy. They might kill you." A long pause, then Tessa sighed. "And he hung up on me. Bud's on his way up. He said he'd text me from the elevator. He totally saw you."
"Yeah, that's a problem." Stephen sat up with a wince.
Well, that might not matter. If things go off the rails with the pizza, we might have seen the last of Bud.
I flew, Tessa, Stephen said softly. My landing was terrible, but I think it might have been momentum and the weight.
I'm going to try changing into Homo Draconis next time and maybe try to bank it better so my speed is less.
Hopefully we'll have Aria with us and she can help us with all that madness, Tessa said. Otherwise, Bud's sacrifice will be for nothing.
Stephen got to his feet and jogged over to the edge of the building again. I think it will work better if you're right on my back when we dive off, and we are going to have to dive. I was too close to the parking structure last time.
Tessa let out a long breath, hands balled into fists, eyes pressed tightly closed.
I don't know if I can do it. I'm not a fan of heights, and I hate flying on airplanes.
She opened her eyes, lips pressed into a thin cut.
Maybe you should go on without me.
Stephen didn't say a word for a long time. He'd been so caught up in his plan he never realized how crazy it was, and that there was a very real chance Tessa might get hurt, or even die.
You're right, he said. I can't ask you to go, and especially since I'm not a very good flyer yet, I completely understand if you want to stay here.
Tessa was quiet for a long beat, her face surging through a range of emotions, fear, worry, anxiety, disgust, before finally landing on determination. She slung her purse so it crisscrossed her chest. Then she rushed over to him and shoved him.
Never, Stephen. I'm in this with you to the end. I'm going with you. You fight, I'll find Aria. If we can get her into the action, they won't stand a chance. And if shit goes sideways, I'm going to fucking cast a spell and fix it, because I'm a magician. Remember in the coffee shop when we talked? We both knew we were special. Well, this is my chance to prove it, and I'm going to. Case closed.
Stephen drew her in and kissed her, and then he hopped up onto the edge. He put out a hand and drew Tessa up onto the concrete wall.
I'm keeping my eyes on you, Stephen, Tessa said. I'm not looking down.
Okay, we're going to run to the end and we're going to jump. I'll turn into the dragon and you'll grab hold of me, okay?
You have a cute butt,
Tessa teased in a breathless voice. Stephen rolled his eyes and grinned. Let's get through this and then you can look at it all you want. Now let's do this thing.
Stephen jogged with Tessa behind him and then he launched himself off the top of the parking garage. He immediately started falling, but at the same time he transformed into a dragon and spread his wings wide. He tried to give Tessa the biggest target possible. The minute his wings caught the air, he rose, and Tessa slammed down onto his back with a woof. She rode on his right side, gripping one of the spines on his back. Her legs were near his right wing. She scrambled, pulling herself up, until her legs straddled him, her hands clasped around the spikes jutting up near his neck. Stephen had never been more focused in his life. He couldn't mess this up. He wouldn't. He loved how Tessa felt on his back, her warm body, and he loved her trust in him. She was afraid of heights, and yet here she was, riding on a dragon through the air.
I can't believe I'm doing this, she screamed out. It was part terror and part happiness.
Stephen raised and lowered his wings and got a good bit of speed going. He felt Tessa kiss his back.
And I love the way you smell.
The wet stink of the city was eclipsed by his smoky orange blossom odor. Stephen turned slightly, carefully, so Tessa wouldn't be thrown off. He spiraled around the Wells Fargo building, rising higher and higher. The night would hide him, and yet he knew that the first order of business needed to be the hiding magic, which was part of the Magica Defensio spell family. His ears twitched when her phone twittered. That would be Bud, in the elevator, Hell's own pizza delivery service. He circled one more time, gaining elevation. He leveled off and streaked toward the windows. He hoped he'd timed it right, or Bud might find himself on the wrong end of a bullet enema. Stephen accessed the skill tree in his mind and focused his animus on the dark armor ability. He thickened the scales on his tail until they were stronger than steel.
Hold tight, he roared to Tessa.
She dropped low, pressing her body into him, wrapping her arms around his neck as he banked his wings. He bashed his extra thick, extra heavy tail into the windows, shattering them.
It was like the Incredible Hulk had come with an iron whip to break through the windows. Glass and metal rained down to the streets below. Stephen flapped away, spun, and then stormed in through the gash in the side of the building.